Blog Talk Radio.
Chocolate Lady 64 here at Blog Talk Radio, and I'm happy to be here. I'm hoping you guys have had a great week. It's Thursday, June the 10th. I'm coming to you today with a story, and that's why I said I like to surprise you, and that's why I said this year would be a different way I do things, because I'm surprised myself. That's why I'm surprising you guys, because a lot of stuff that I'm finding out and learning about is a surprise to me. So that's the reason why, most of my segments are called I Will Surprise You, because all kinds of stuff is going to be happening. Okay. I come to you tonight, you guys, to talk about an incident that happened over close to 90 years ago. And this is really, truly, it's addressed to our African-American listeners, and I'm not trying to single them out or anything, but it's something that we need to talk about because we hadn't had an opportunity to do that. And that's why I told you anytime I hear any type of historical, black historical event that's happened, I'm going to bring it to you guys. I don't care what type of form or fashion I can do it. I want to bring it to you guys. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about the Black Wall Street. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but it was an area in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where an event took place, and this event was never relived. It was never renovated or brought back, reborn, or whatever you want to call it. It was never again done. Okay, so we're going to talk about that tonight. I'm sorry, my English is very bad. My grammar is very bad tonight. I don't know why, but please excuse me for it. I'll work on it more. Okay, I'm going to discuss this from an excerpt from Riot in Greenwood. On May 31st to June 1st, 1921, what would become known as the worst race riot in America history took place. A young black man was accused of assaulting a white female elevator operator, and it was rumored that he would be lynched. Racial tensions quickly mounted, and Tulsa's Greenwood District came under attack by white rioters who burned 35 blocks of North Tulsa to the ground. 10 whites and 26 blacks are known to have been killed. Many more deaths went unconfirmed. Okay, before I finish, I have Mr. Ten here with me tonight, and he's going to be commenting. He's going to be commentating on this subject tonight because he is the one who brought it to my attention about how important it is for us to know where we came from, you know, and how, and I spoke about this last Thursday, how it's important for us to stay educated, because lots of our history, even though a lot of it has some negative actions and events, a lot of that should make us stronger. But to me, it seems like we're weaker. We find anything to lynch onto, to grab onto, to hold onto, to make us who we are, instead of going straight down to where it comes from, down in our soul, in our backbone, from history, from generations to generations, to make us strong people. And these people worked together. They didn't think that they were better than the next person. They actually worked together and made this community happen. So I'm going to get Ten to educate us more on this. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Mr. Ten.
Hello, everybody. Tonight, I want to take off my tin hat, no pun intended. I'm going to beat Tavares this evening because I learned about this as Tavares. But the thing about it is, it's not just tragic African American history, it's American history. It happened right here on our soil. It's actually said to be, excuse me, the only time America has attacked its own city using military force and military tactics, which is a very, very sad commentary on what happened. Well, basically, I'm going to sum the story up in so many words. You're talking about a community of black people that owned 35 blocks in northern Tulsa, Oklahoma. When I say owned, it wasn't any cotton fields and it wasn't any gang banging or anything like that. It wasn't no mobsters. It wasn't nothing like what black people are portrayed today as. If we take over something, the takeover would be that we've mobbed up and we've taken over something by force. This was done by, I believe we read up on it, by black people with no higher education than a fourth grade education. Some of them. Intelligent black people who sought out a better life for themselves by, before we could understand, this is why this place was destroyed. It was before they could get to us with the drugs, before they could get to us with anything else. We were productive black people, and we owned $2.3 million worth of property that was essentially belonged to us. Essentially. It was called Black Wall Street. Some of you may know Black Wall Street as the rapper The Game from California. Him and his friends, they all rap about how they're Black Wall Street, and that's the name of their company. But really, they're just really defiling the memory of, they say 25 to 35 black people died, but the more I'm doing my research, it's looking more like a couple of hundred. And I'll tell you a little bit about what they did as far as how they attacked us on their own soil. It says here that basically, let's see. For a long time, Tulsa has stigma that it was only American city to be bombed by its own military. The riot commission was able to refute that error. Dick Warner of the Tulsa Historical Society did extensive research on the airplane subject. What I'm talking about is that the people got together, not the black people, the other people in the other side of Tulsa, got together in airplanes and dropped bombs, nitroglycerin bombs, on the city full of black people. Let me say that one more time. People got in airplanes, flew over Tulsa, Oklahoma, over this productive place where black people were worth more than any city block that's worth something now, to this day. They worked together. They had their own libraries. They had their own pharmacies. They had their own lawyers. They had their own churches. They had their own schools ran, performed by black people. Everything was all black. And I'm not talking about what Jay-Z talks about. This is something totally different. He's talking about something way off the wall. What I'm talking about is an all-black community that was worth millions. You can say the first millionaires, black people. So anyway, like I was saying, basically what it was that they dropped, after this incident happened with this young man and this white girl, Sarah Page, who was the elevator operator, and the elevator stopped in between floors, and it jerked, and the young man fell. End up, I guess he fell onto the white girl. She proceeded to hit him with her purse. She's the elevator operator, by the way. Proceeded to hit him with her purse in defense of his own self, because you're not, as a black person, against white people, you're never supposed to defend yourself. Never supposed to defend yourself. But he defended himself, and he tried to block the blows. And from the appearance of it, all they heard was the white girl screaming. He jumped out of the elevator in between floors and ran off. The white people called for a lynching. They put it in the newspaper, nab the Negro, or something to that effect. That was the headline for the evening paper. This is by that evening. They had already printed up the editorial about what they wanted to say. For harming this white girl, who, by the way, ended up never pressing charges, but they held the black man anyway once they got him. So the story goes that once he got away, the white girl went to the police, complained, as, you know, I'm not going to say most white people, but this is not anything historical. This goes on to this day where white people feel that because of their skin color, they can call on anyone and anyone will be at their assistance in a matter of minutes, which is very true. We experienced that ourselves over here where our neighbors could call the police and they'll be here in 15 minutes. Mind you, we live in a rural area. Now, we can call the police on our neighbors and they'll take an hour to get here. So that's what I'm saying. But they rushed to her defense. They believed everything she said. And they went and they actually wanted to lynch this black man for an accident that the white girl caused. We'll let that sink in for a minute. At any rate, what happened was the man was held in the jail, and let's see, it says, I can't remember the exact number, but a large number of white people showed up to the jail to witness and or participate in the lynching of this black man. Well, once word had got back to the citizens of Greenwood, which it normally takes a while to get back to, but seems like they got there just in the nick of time, 25 black people from the city of Greenwood, this 35-block area, is worth $2.3 million. 25 of its citizens showed up, armed to the teeth, ready to go to war with these white people because they wouldn't let their black brother go. And I tell you, they massacred those people. They massacred them. Right here in American soil. This isn't just African-American history. This is American history that I had never seen in any of my books. Going through high school, middle school, I know about Napoleon and his problems with his short stature and his misunderstood education. I know about King Louis VIII. I know about, what's his name, Christopher Columbus, who discovered a place that was already discovered and inhabited. I learned about the Pilgrims and how they killed all the Indians and took over the land and called it their own. I learned about all that, but I never, ever, ever learned about Greenwood, Oklahoma.
Black Wall Street.
The Black Wall Street. You're right. I wonder why. So, basically, it's a story, it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy that more black people aren't familiar with it. This is 1921. This is post which war was this? This is post World War I, I believe. Post World War I, black people had their stuff together enough to come up with an area this size that worked together this well. You think we could do that in 2010? And therein lies the problem. That's my main question. You can't mention what happened without mentioning what could happen in the future. I don't think under any circumstances black people today could ever be that organized to accrue that much property and wealth to be a self-sufficient, owned and operated deal. Your black entertainment television is owned by white people. Your music television is not owned by a black person. It's owned by white people. Your cable networks, all of them, are owned by white people. But this area in Greenwood was owned by black people. And look at what they did to it. They dropped bombs on it, destroyed it. 35 blocks. 35 blocks of businesses and black-owned entrepreneurship endeavors. 35 blocks of them, they burned it down. Then they enacted this clause, the green card clause. This is after they enacted martial law. This is after the martial law was declared over and it was to cease. They enacted this green card clause where if you were found in the streets and you were a black citizen and you were either displaced by, if you weren't basically working for the white man, if you weren't working for the white man after the martial law had ended, you were ushered back to stables where they weren't. It was all the injured people of Greenwood, and you were forced to help them, which isn't a bad thing. The only bad part about it is that life still had to go on, and these people were so used to making money that they had to work, which I admire that. And the only problem is that they weren't working for themselves any longer. The white man had come and leveled everything, burned everything down to the ashes. They raped, they robbed, they pillaged. They acted barbarian. 1921, Ku Klux Klan. This Ku Klux Klan was a conglomerate of lawyers and judges, teachers, preachers, brick masons, doctors. You name it. All the citizens of Tulsa, Oklahoma, all the good, what do they call it? They call the good and decent citizens, in quotation marks. The good and decent citizens of Tulsa. But, hey, this is American history. This isn't just African-American history. This is American history. And I think that most of America needs to realize this, which leads me to my next point. Our president, which everybody voted for, I'm sure we all supported, and for those that didn't, I didn't support neither one of the candidates because I smelled something fishy from the jump. The funny thing is, 90 years later, do you know that we're still fighting for reparations for these 300 people that were killed, were attacked on American soil? 90 years later, we're still fighting for reparations for these people and their descendants. But our president, who was a civil rights, am I right? He's a civil rights lawyer in Chicago.
Yeah, I think so.
He was a civil rights lawyer in Chicago. He's been that for how many years? That's how he came up through the ranks, right?
I think so.
Well, I mean, he's quote-unquote black, whatever that may mean, because I'm not black. I don't know. Black is a color. It's not a race. It's a color, just like white. They call themselves Caucasian, Caucasoid, whatever they want to call themselves. So all I'm saying is this man that claims to be black or of African, well, he's not even, he's Nigerian and Hawaiian, which I don't know, that doesn't qualify as, mm-hmm. Does it?
Yeah, because he was born in Hawaii. Hawaii is the 51st state. I mean, it's one of the 50 states, so he is an American.
Oh, he's an American. I'm just saying, is he an African American?
Yeah, because he's got Nigerian.
My question is he a black man?
But you said you don't use the word black.
Well, I'm saying, is he a black man?
Yes, he is. He's a mixed race man.
No. Their rule back then was if you were 10%, anybody know about the paper bag rule?
Mm-hmm.
If you were the same color as a paper bag, you were considered black, African American, or whatever they want to give it. They want to class it up now, but I've never been to Africa, and 9 times out of 10, if we go to Africa, they won't like us. Despite what the news media says, I encourage y'all to travel to Africa and see if you get the same warm reception that you would expect from our brothers and sisters in Africa. But I doubt it, because they say we disgrace the skin color by the things that we do. I'm pretty sure if the people of Greenwood went back to Africa, I'm pretty sure they'd be more well-received than the 2010 and beyond generations would be accepted. But at any rate, I'm saying this to say all that. All this NAACP, people don't understand. NAACP, its founding member, there was only out of the whole board of directors and all that, once it was founded, there was one black man on the whole board of directors of the NAACP. The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, on its board of directors, in its inception, had one black person on the whole entire board of directors. It was W.E.B. Du Bois. Just for y'all that didn't know. But why is that? Is the NAACP really working for the advancement of colored people? Who knows? Have they ever looked into this? Who knows? Who knows? I hope they did for the advancement of colored people, because in order to advance, we have to be made whole from the past.
Okay.
So at any rate, yeah, I'm going to turn the mic back over to the lovely hostess with the mostest. We'll talk more about it in just a second. Grab my papers real quick.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Tin, for I'm sorry, Mr. Tavares. I wanted to just name some names of people that were part of the Black Wall Street. I'm going to name the name of the person who actually started it. But first, I want to go back. I want to go back to the beginning. Mr. Swofford did a great job on telling you the history behind that. But I'm going to go back to the very beginning. It says permanent black settlers in Oklahoma date from 1830s, from the 1830s, although a few blacks had come with early explorers many years prior to the formation of the Sooner State. The federal government removed the five civilized tribes, the Cherokees, Choctaws, Creeks, and the Chickasaws, and the Seminoles, from their homes in the southeastern United States to lands in present-day Oklahoma. Do you see how...
Man, I didn't even know that.
Just, I mean, boldly just pick these people up
and move
them to a whole nother area. The from Oklahoma, Kansas, and Arkansas. That's where they moved them to. Okay, for the advancing cotton frontier.
So they moved the people off
the
land
for the
cotton.
Yeah, stole the land. The Indians brought their black slaves with them on the infamous Trail of Tears. The long, grueling midwinter forced march of misery. March of misery during which many died.
So you saying some of them didn't even make it to the place where they were kicked off to?
Yeah. What I'm saying is the Indians had black slaves. And he's talking about the black slaves
that died
on their way to the next place. Okay. Then it says some blacks were professionals, others were lynched. Professionals and craftsmen, while most blacks toiled in the field and performed other menial tasks, there were the craftsmen, carpenters, bricklayers, blacksmiths, and horsemen. Blacks were also the tribal professionals serving as doctors, grocers, interpreters, and other occupations not fashioned by the Native Americans. So just imagine our prestige, our pedigree is what it's called, that these people held, okay?
Now, you said that the Indians had black slaves?
Yes, sure did. Sure
did. Do you think that the Indians had any idea what slave and ownership of a person was? Who introduced that idea to them?
Well, we know who introduced that idea.
So who would introduce an idea to a people that were basically the same color as the other people?
Well, for one thing, you got to think they ram-robbed the Indians. In other words, they traded people and things for pebbles, and you know, because the Indians didn't know that what they were getting wasn't, you know, and then they showed them how to enslave African Americans.
It wasn't the basic enslavement. It wasn't the cotton picking enslavement. It wasn't the slave master with a whip enslavement. These were interpreters, doctors. These were black people of well-to-do, you know, interpreters.
But see, those are two different people I'm talking about. You're not understanding what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Those two, the people who could not, they couldn't enslave, and the people that they couldn't use in the doing the menial tasks in slavery was the ones who were the doctors, the grocers, and all that.
They couldn't use smart people.
Much
like today, they can't use you if you're smart because you might pose a threat to them.
Some blacks were professionals, others were lynched. The remnants of racism, if not vestiges of slavery, lingered after the Civil War. The bitterness manifested itself in a caste system enforced with violence, lynchings, and communal hatred. After the Civil War, through the turn of the century, the Tuskegee Institute and other organizations chronicled more than 4,000 lynchings, and between the years of 1880 and 1905, 25 years, not one person was ever convicted of any crime associated with these killings. Now, do you understand? Do you get that point? I'm hoping you guys are understanding the point is being made. 4,000 lynchings within 25-year span. 4,000. Not one person got accused of the crime or served any time for those crimes. The Cleveland Gazette reported in 1903 there were 3,233 lynchings in one form or another in this country in the 21 years ending January 1, 1903. That is definitely deep. It says, now, 1903, let's see.
This was around the turn of the century, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, it says, O.W. Gurley, the founder of Black Wall Street of America, before the turn of the century, O.W. Gurley, a wealthy Arkansas landowner and entrepreneur, resigned a presidential appointment under President Grover Cleveland to come to Oklahoma for the 1889 land run. He secured a farm and later moved to Perry, Oklahoma, where he served as principal of the city's school. O.W. Gurley was born in Huntsville, Alabama, on Christmas Day, 1868. When he was 8, his parents, both former slaves, moved to Pine Bluff, Arkansas. He graduated in 1884 from the Branch Normal School of Jefferson County, Arkansas, and taught school in the county for 8 years. He married Emma Wells. I'm sorry. Let's see. In July of 1906, he moved to Tulsa and brought 40 acres to be sold to coloreds only. His first business was a rooming house on a dusty trail near the railroad tracks. He called the avenue Greenwood, named for a city in Mississippi. Many of the migrants fleeing the oppression in Mississippi would room in his building near the Frisco Railroad tracks. He and his wife, Emma, also built a two-story buildings and 5 residences and bought an 80-acre farm in Rogers County. Gurley was also a founding member of what is today Vernon AME Church. Gurley's self-imposed segregation set the Greenwood boundaries of separateness that exist to this day. Pine Street to North Archer Street and the Frisco Tracks to the South Cincinnati Street on the west and Lansing Street on the east. The segregation is pronounced in subtle landmarks. South of Archer, Greenwood Avenue does not exist in the white neighborhoods. To the north of Pine, it is called Garrison. Gurley's prominence and wealth were short-lived. He lost everything during the race war. The Gurley Hotel at 112 North Greenwood, the street's first cafe that were housed there. Gurley also owned a two-story building at 119 North Greenwood. It housed Carter's Barbershop, Hardy Rooms, a pool hall, and cigar store. All were reduced to ruins by his account in court records. He lost nearly $200,000 in the 1921 race war. Okay. Just imagine, this man came here, all he wanted to do is to live and enjoy life. And because of his smartness and his education, he became a threat to the residents of Oklahoma, of Tulsa.
It's always been like that.
Now, I want you guys to understand what we're trying to say here. And I guess it's deeper, and if you understand your history, your eyes can open wider. You know, it's a lot of people that want to forget what we've been through. Oh, leave that in the past. But you guys don't understand. If we had a city like that right now to this day, we would be a total threat. I think of Atlanta, Georgia, for instance. If Atlanta, Georgia, that would have been a perfect Greenwood city. Because there are black doctors, there's black entrepreneurs, there's very highly educated people that live in Atlanta, Georgia. But because of us, and I say us as a people, because of all the other things we allow coming in and out, we have destroyed another Greenwood.
And we did it ourselves.
And we did it. White men didn't come in and do anything. They sit back and they laugh at us. Because you know what? They don't know. Lots of them don't know anything about Greenwood. You asked them what happened in Greenwood, Oklahoma, they wouldn't know. Okay? They're looking at what's going on now and how we slowly but surely are destroying ourselves, okay? We don't want to see that. We don't want to talk about how we're slowly but surely destroying ourselves. We'd rather hear that, you know, everything is perfect, but everything is not perfect. You know, we're out of jobs because guess what? We're out of jobs because we've never taken care of each other. That's why we're out of jobs. You know, we're smarter than what they think, but guess what? It's easy for us to act dumb because it's good to be dumb. It's not good to have smarts, you see. But these people didn't let all that stuff bother them. This one young man started this whole area himself, and others came along and joined him. I was looking at some of the names. Let me see if I can find some of the names of the guys who were part of this. Okay, I'm looking at Simon Berry. Simon Berry established the first black bus service in Park. Simon Berry, an extraordinary visionary, arrived in Tulsa in 1915. He organized the first transportation system, Berry's Jitney Service, for North Tulsa. His longstanding Lansing and Greenwood City bus routes were renamed after the urban renewal demolition in the 1970s that relocated neighborhoods. The Black Wall Street entrepreneur operated the Jitney service with pickup and drop points in well-populated locations throughout the black community. He ran the first-class operation, purchasing new Mormon and Ford convertibles. Look at this. Look at this, you guys. Come on.
I think the part that we're all missing is even in an economy where there was nothing.
Yep.
When he arrived in Greenwood,
it was nothing. Yep.
It was nothing. It wasn't even Greenwood. He had to name it Greenwood.
That's right.
Even when there's nothing, these black people got together and made it something.
Mm-hmm.
No bickering, no red versus blue,
mm-hmm.
No vice lords, no Crips. No gang banging. No, they got together.
Mm-hmm.
This man invented a bus service,
yep,
for a city that didn't even exist yet. Are you serious? But let us try that now.
Mm-hmm.
Not only will we be stopped by the government, we'll stop ourselves before the government even gets to us.
That's right. It says an astute businessman, he later included buses and gained exclusive city franchises. Oh. Let's see. Franchise.
Talking excellent business.
To an experienced pilot. Oh, okay.
I mean, excellent businessman.
Mm-hmm. Pioneering with J.L. Nordington, a leading building contractor, Berry owned what may have been the first and only black airline service in the nation. My God, I didn't know that. Listen at this.
Educate yourself, black people.
Woo!
Educate yourself. What year was this, Mom?
This, it didn't say. Wait, let me finish. Okay, it says, a charter service used primarily by wealthy oil barons to visit their leases in surrounding counties. He was Tulsa's largest employer of blacks with a full maintenance crew operating his bus and airplane garage. Berry sold his franchise to the city of Tulsa in the early 1950s with the condition that they must retain his drivers and mechanics as part of the agreement. This provided Tulsa's first black bus drivers and in a segregated system. The uniformed drivers became symbols of racial progress. He and other business leaders opened the Regal Theater. He purchased 13 acres and established Berry's Park, a Madison and Virgin Streets, with a swimming pool, ballpark, and a picnic ground.
Black people, this is before the 60s, black people.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This is before the 60s, before Martin Luther King,
yep,
before Malcolm X, this is before all of that.
Yep. It said the park was sold to the city and renamed Lincoln Park. Many years later, it was again renamed for Ed Lacy, a popular Booker T. Washington High School coach. While the names have changed, the swimming pool he built at Berry's Park is the same today. Simon Berry was among the most post-riot generation who exemplified earlier entrepreneurial pillars that reestablished the fame and the lure of the Black Wall Street of America. During dedication of the Black Wall Street Memorial in 1996, Tulsa businessman renamed for Ed Lacy, a popular Booker T. Washington High School coach, while the names have The Black Wall Street, during the dedication of the Black Wall Street Memorial in 1996, postal businessman George Charlton enshrined Simon Berry with a plaque and a tree in his memory. I just spoke to you guys about two main characters of the Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Two main characters that made a difference. I mean, he had his own airline. You never hear that. Don't tell me you've heard that, because I've never heard it. Not to say that I'm the first to ever hear something, but you guys have to understand, this is very important information that I was never told this in high school. I totally agree with Mr. Swofford when he says that he was never taught any of this. It was never taught in the books, okay, of history, Black history. Even in our Black history books, I don't remember reading about the.
I took African American studies
in high school and in college. And what was so weird was, during my time when we stayed in Michigan when I was in the 7th or 8th grade, the same book of Black history that we used in the 7th grade, here I go 5 years later in the 12th grade, living here in Louisiana, we was using that same book. That blowed my mind. So that just tells you how important our history is. The changes and the things, I guarantee you, our new history books don't have anything like this in it.
But like I said, it covers Christopher Columbus.
Yeah.
It covers Napoleon Bonaparte. It covers the French Revolution. It covers the Industrial Revolution. It covers Genghis Khan. It covers the Nazis. It covers everything else, but it skips totally, completely over an important piece of American history.
Yeah, not no foreign history, but American history. It also says here, perhaps nowhere else in America is there a single thoroughfare which registers such significance to local Negroes as North Greenwood Avenue in Tulsa. Today, after some 25 years of steady growth and development, Greenwood is something more than an avenue. It is an institution. The people of Tulsa have come to regard it as a symbol of racial prominence and progress, not only for the restricted area of the street itself, but for the Negro section of Tulsa as a whole. Isn't that amazing? I would love to go to Oklahoma. I would love to go and see this. Oh, I would be so amazed to go and see this. This would be my trip to history, you know, back into history. There are several other places I would love to go that are landmarks for us, you know. It's just amazing. I mean, really, it is so amazing that all of this is going on. It also says right here, it says Black Wall Street Pride, all owned coloreds, because that's what it was called, all owned by coloreds. It had a maid's day off. Thursday night has become an institution for Tulsa, the day that most domestics have off every week. Thursday has come to be universally recognized as a holiday for thousands of maids, butlers, and cooks, chauffeurs, and other domestics who make up about 50% of Tulsa's Negro workers. About 10:30 a.m., they are free for the rest of the night, of the day. Their week's shopping and other personal affairs, the domestic stream into Greenwood, let's see, at night by the hundreds. Here they are joined by their married friends
let's talk about somebody else. I found another person that was part of this. It was called Getty Birds of West, won by the Black troops in Oklahoma Battle of Honey Springs. Many of the Civil War veterans became Buffalo Soldiers, Indian fighters clearing the West and patrolling Oklahoma's borders before the land run. After the Emancipation Proclamation was issued on January the 1st, 1863, the Declaration led to the establishment of Black regiments. The enlistees were to be commanded by white officers. The proclamation was only directed to the states that had succeeded, and very few slaves were freed. However, thousands did escape to the Union lines. Before then, President Lincoln had steadfastly refused to utilize excuse me. Gotta go back. Yeah, I think I read too much. That's not what I wanted to read. Okay, so Cherokee Indians, you got to remember too, during the settlement and the migration to this area, there were also Indians involved. So you had African Americans and Indians trying to establish themselves in a city where they were really probably not wanted. So I thought that was so amazing and something to talk about. Let me see here.
I'm just surprised that it's not covered. I'm surprised that it's not covered in our history books. I'm surprised it's something of such historic proportion. We know about the Wright brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't even high school educated. These two came up with something with no high school education and flew a plane 20 feet, got the Congressional Medal of Honor from the United States President for flying something 20 feet. But what did the black people get?
Nothing.
We can't even get reparations.
Yep.
I'm not whining about my 40 acres and the mule. I just want to see if you'll really do it. That's what they promised. And I'm not saying revolt against the government. Damn. I'm just playing because I know they're listening. But you should listen because they probably didn't know it either. Yes, black people settled a part of Oklahoma. And yes, the Ku Klux Klan bombed it, used airplanes, used military tactics on its own soil. Good job. There goes your America. But I'm hoping that, like they said, that they rebuilt it and it's not what it should be. Just imagine if it was worth $2.3 million in 1921. Just imagine how much it'd be worth now. Just imagine how much it'd be worth now. Probably about infinity. It'd probably be worth infinity by now because of the meaning behind what it was. So if they have to call it Black Wall Street, what is the regular Wall Street?
Well, they had to give it a significant name because there was no other place like it.
So I'm going to ask again, if they had to name that Black Wall Street, the Wall Street that survived, that's the New York Stock Exchange, what is that?
I don't know.
Good question.
Okay, you guys, we're going to break for a second. We've got about 15 more minutes to go.
We're going
to
eat some fried chicken and some watermelon and drink some Kool-Aid. What's up?
Mr. Swofford, are you just a little bit angry now? It sounds like you're a little angry.
I am, because you know what? The whole thing is that the people that can be responsible to bring about change, the change that we can believe in, let us down. And I'm not even saying that in a effort to undermine any authority. I'm just saying that it was so much more that could have been done, that we could have been so much more further ahead than what we are now. Where are you, rappers? Where are you, hip-hop heads that know about the first rap album? Did you know about this? What are your priorities, America?
Yeah. I want to play you a little bit of something, and I want you guys to listen in.
To be your friend, smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within.
Wake up!
Smiling faces sometimes they don't tell the truth. Smiling faces tell lies, and I got to.
Song for the segment tonight. I wish we could understand and be more aware of what we, more aware of our surroundings and more aware of our history and more aware of what we can do. My son was talking about Mr. Swofford, because he is my kid. We were talking about the NAACP. I, myself, joined the NAACP here in this area because for a long time we didn't have it. We had, the one that we had prior to this one was very much so corrupt. I mean, very much so corrupted. And it was torn apart. Go ahead.
I have a specific comment to make about the NAACP. As I said before, out of the board members that founded it, only one of them was black. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that, that the one black man hope out of all that was going on during that time when it was founded, because there was a reason it was founded. During all that time, the one thing that the colored people, which I'm not even familiar with that term either, that sounds like some old 1950s, but the colored man didn't have anything to hold on to other than the idea that, hey, this is the national alliance of all colored people, and it's for us, but it's mainly white people running it. So what I'm trying to say is they're going to give you false hope, but it's up to us, my mother and I included, it's up to us to change everything or something, or don't change anything and just live for today like most of us do. So I want to send a shout-out to all you hip-hop rappers, you artists, everybody that has anything to do with a creative art form. Through your music, through your arts, through your pictures, through your paintings, through your writings, through all that, say something. Just don't not say nothing. Say something. Say something of meaning, with worth, with more than just jewels and rims and more than just my wife left me. It's more than that. The world, we're so selfish these days. It's self-centered that all we're concerned about is us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not us as a people, but us as individuals.
Yeah.
So.
We, but you know, you have to understand, too, history repeats itself. According to the Bible, that's how we're going to be prideful people. People with pride and people with selfishness. And that's not how we're supposed to be. But we have turned into that. Years and years, no matter what Martin Luther King did, no matter what Rosa Parks did, no matter what this, what did I talk about last week? The Friendship Nine, that's what it was. No matter what they did, no matter what precedents they set in America when it came to black history and when it came to us as a people, we still become, after all these years, we're still selfish, prideful people. We don't care about anybody but ourselves and what we can get out of something. We don't pay attention to what we can give to other people. It's more of what you can give to me. I don't understand that concept because I know I am a very giving person. If it's just advice, money, care, whatever, I'm giving. I don't mind giving. We don't take that, and that's how we're really supposed to be. We're not supposed to keep everything. He says, store not treasures of this world. We're supposed to be giving it to the poor. We're supposed to be giving education, educating somebody, doing something, mentoring. And don't do it for the camera. Don't do it so everybody else can say, ooh, pat him on the back. No, do it because it's in your heart to do it. Fight for a good cause, not because it makes you look good. Fight for a cause that you know will change someone else's world, not only your world, but someone else's world. Think about this. Black Wall Street will never, ever happen again, according to what history has told us. It will never happen again.
And you can basically attribute that to they taught us our lesson. That's exactly what they're sitting back, and they're hiding it from the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They taught us our lesson. We'll teach those colored people never to ever try to be independent, to ever be smart and intelligent. We'll teach them not to do that. Don't you ever try to overcome your
atrocity.
And then on top of that, what makes it so horrible, the man that started it all, his parents were slaves.
Yep.
His parents were slaves. What story do all these other entertainers have? Were their parents slaves? Then how come they can't make a change like that man took a change? And he did it all educated. He was in school teaching.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do it through rapping. He didn't get the fast money through selling drugs to his people.
Yep.
He did it through being smart. And that's what I'm trying to promote, intelligence amongst black people. If you can do that, then we can win every time, and there's nothing they could do to stop us, because I swear if Greenwood ever was to be reinvented,
mm-hmm.
I like to say I'm trying to reestablish Greenwood in my heart because I run Black City Republic. Black City Republic is a black city. We're set aside from all the other nonsense, period. There's no cash.
Are you trying to get a plug?
I'm plugging it because I didn't plug it last time.
Oh, well.
I was nice last time. I didn't plug it.
Okay, we're not plugging tonight.
Oh, well, I'm not plugging it, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
We're trying to be set aside from all the other nonsense. We're our own. We don't have to play fiddler for these people that want to pay us big money for us to look like monkeys and baboons and wear all these shiny clothes and the we're not the P. Diddy's or the Rick Rosses of the world. We don't pander to the dope selling and the thug life. It's not really about that. It never was about that. What they do is they pay these people big money to keep the rest of us entertained while they're taking everything else out of our house, taking the spirituality out of our house, taking the God out of our life. That's what they're doing. That's what they promote. That's what they're all about.
And hold, I don't want you to get the impression that we're saying the white man is keeping us down. That's not what we're saying.
No, no, no. We're keeping ourselves down.
We keep ourselves at a standstill in life.
We sell out.
You know, even though we have an African-American president now, and not saying this to the point where I'm saying, oh, everything is supposed to be fine. I'm saying this because that was an opportunity that never would anybody in a million years would be able to see, that we would have an African-American president. But that's history. That is a history. That's a monumental history because we were never to be that smart. We were never to have that much intelligence in their eyesight.
You know what's the real monument to history? And I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's all right. Go ahead.
The real monument to history is when black people owned 35 blocks in Tulsa, Oklahoma, worth $2.3 million. That's a real testament of history.
Okay. You're right about that. You're right. I'm talking about for now. I'm talking about in present day. That's back then. I'm talking about present day. I still say this, and I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying to this right here that we have to start putting together our minds. We've got to start working together in every avenue that we can to at least attempt another Greenwood. If we can find someone we can attempt another Greenwood, it would be awesome. And it's up to us to make that difference. The more I talk about this, the more passionate I become. And it's just another journey that I think I need to go on to make sure that we are doing that much. So I say this with 5 minutes left in the show. I want to thank my co-host tonight, Mr. Tavares Wofford. I thank you for helping me and assisting me in my show tonight. Thank you for the knowledge.
My pleasure.
Thank you for keeping Mama, because he is my son, Mama, up to date with a lot of stuff that I don't take time out, and I'm guilty of it, to learn. Stuff like this is very interesting, and I don't mind repeating it any time I need to. Learning all this stuff is very, very monumental for us as a family, because we know we need to take the next step to make this happen for someone else. You know what I'm saying? We need to do that. It's up to us to make this happen. next week. Matter of fact, I think he just gave me a great show that we're going to be talking about. I want to do the history of the NAACP, where it started, where it's at now, how big it is. We're going to talk about NAACP next week. I want to say tonight, thank you guys for a lovely evening. I enjoyed our discussion. And I would like to say, go ahead.
Peace, and may the higher power be with you. Whoever you may worship, Allah, Buddha, whoever you may worship, may he be with you and may he reside in your heart. Promote good energy. People, it's not bad. It's not bad. Good energy is really good. It comes back. But shalom.
This is Chocolate Lady 64, and I am sounding off. I will see you guys next week. I will be here next week again with Chocolate Lady 64 on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you again. We will discuss NAACP. You know how to get in contact with me. You can either get in contact with me on Blog Talk Radio. I didn't even announce tonight my phone number. I apologize for not doing that. I get so enthralled in stuff, and I kind of not make my program work for me the way I want it to. But you guys know how to contact me. I want you guys to have a great night. I will see you next Thursday. This is Chocolate Lady 64 sounding off. Good night.